Hello and welcome to the Recon Rod. I'm Dane Cash.
And I'm Cosmo Catalano.
And you're not experiencing deja vu. We really are doing our second show in about a 36-hour period. I kind of feigned fatigue of racing in our last show. You know, we're after the Tour de France now and kind of into that part of the season where a lot of people start to wonder, what are we doing here? But I really do like this part of the season, actually. But I will say that that faux fatigue may be turning into real fatigue. I was up pretty late editing that last show, and here we are again doing another podcast. So apologies in advance if I mispronounce a Polish word or name. That was probably going to happen anyway, but it could especially happen now that I'm running on a lack of sleep. But I do love this race. The Tour of Poland is, at least for the last couple of years, it's been an extremely exciting race. You can go back, at least as far as 2010, the general classification has come down to 15 seconds or less, and usually to the final day. So there's been nail-biting scenarios in all of the last few Tours de Pologne. And I'm thinking that with a relatively wide-open race this year, looking at the start list, that could happen again.
Definitely. One of the things that I really dig about this race is that it's really classicsy. Like, it doesn't fall into that pattern of flat stage, intermediate stage, uphill finish stage that a lot of stage races do. So you end up with a lot of different opportunities to kind of break up and come up with these weird scenarios for how exactly the GC is going to play out. And I think a lot of that is kind of down to the infrastructure in Poland. Like, not saying they're a third world country or anything, but they have a lot of narrow roads. They have a lot of steep climbs. The pavement is not great in a lot of places. So you end up with the same sort of things that will break up a one-day classic, except in a fairly large, distance-wise, stage race. And it's a unique thing to see, and something I really like to see, and something I hope the race doesn't lose as it becomes a more prominent part of the calendar.
You know, Amstel Gold has been becoming increasingly less interesting in the last couple of years. I think, based on your suggestions, we should try to convince them to move it to a Soviet bloc country. What do you think?
I think that would be an awesome idea. Not just, like, I think Amstel's done an okay job of messing with their course after realizing it had turned into another uphill finish classic. I still like the old course better with the downhill and then the flat finish in Valkenburg where Armstrong...
We can't get rid of this guy. He's in every podcast. Show. We have to make a little mention of him.
Now I'm going to mention his famous loss to Eric Decker. Just kept trying to come around him in the finish stretch and couldn't quite do it, which is, you know... I just like to point to Postal's classics performance, or I did back when people referred to Johan Bruneel as a genius instead of whatever they call him now. But yeah, Armstrong and Postal, terrible history of classics finishes, but you should check out that old Amstel footage. I think it was 2001. Really good race. I think he also came in second in 99. This is quite the sidetrack. But yeah, it would totally work in like Hungary.
Speaking of kind of bumpy profiles that are friendly, or at least were, to late attacks, this race has offered a couple of different opportunities in the last few years to aggressive riders who have gone on the attack in the last couple kilometers on some of the lumpier stages that look like they might be for the sprinters. And then they turned out to go to, in one case, Taylor Finney took an awesome win with a really late attack 2 years ago. And I think it's because of that, as you say, that kind of not really settled nature of all these profiles. They're not perfectly flat. The roads are not always great, and that leads to some exciting racing all the way to the finish, all through all seven stages, hopefully, this year.
Yeah, and it's a good thing that they have these unpredictable finishes, because for literally, like, the last 7K of the race, the road is lined with these balloons, promotional balloons with the names of various Polish brands that sponsor the event. And it's not like they're regular roadside decorations that are, like, instead of, like, an arch, you know, saying Barilla Pasta, there's a balloon. It's like they're huge inflatable balloons, the size of that arch, but they're like every 5 feet. It's like a Mario level or something from like back when they first had N64 and they didn't really know what to do with 3D images. So they just, you know, kept putting up the same image with a different pattern on it. It's crazy. It's bizarre. And it was really cool to watch Taylor Finney get that super late escape past this rolling background of crazy-ass Polish balloons. And in addition to these, like, this surrealist environment of giant balloons and odd finishes, it also has, the race kind of has an ability to turn out new names. You know, it was one of Dan Martin's first confirmations that he could in fact be a great rider instead of just a pretty good rider related to a great rider. It was the first time I saw Peter Sagan, still his only World Tour GC win.
Yeah, that's right.
So, you know, it does a lot of things that other races don't do on a regular basis.
It's actually quite an old race, to give a little brief history lesson. It's been around on and off, mostly on, since at least after the Second World War, since 1928. It was an amateur race, though, for a really, really long time, and it kind of competed with the peace race for popularity in Eastern Europe. But then after the Iron Curtain fell, the Tour of Poland really became much more prominent, and it really quickly gained prominence. The peace race doesn't exist anymore. The Tour de Pologne was an inaugural member of the Pro Tour, and it's been that way ever since. It's been on the World Tour since the Pro Tour became the World Tour, and now it draws a lot of really big international stars who are kind of sometimes targeting the race, other times looking for something to do with the form that they took out of the Tour de France, and also maybe looking for a way to get into shape for the Vuelta. So it kind of creates this interesting dynamic.
Yep. And it's strangely appropriate because it does sort of come at this point in the calendar where, it, similarly as to what we talked about with San Sebastian, you have riders who are super sharp from racing at the Tour, but maybe a little tired, and then other guys who haven't been racing coming into it. And it's, you know, it can be a Vuelta build-up race. It can be a race that people are targeting. Like, there are Polish teams here, and they would definitely be psyched to get big wins. So it's really, again, another factor that sort of contributes to this difficult to predict nature of the event.
All right, so we gave a little bit of an overview of what to kind of expect from the roads, but let's take a closer look at the profiles of the seven stages of the 2015 Tour de Pologne. This year's race, the seven stages, there's a lot of overlap with the way things ran last year, which I think is a pretty good thing because it was a very exciting race last year. So the first three stages, relatively sprinty, potentially could go to a late attacker or a punchy guy, but not really going to be a big GC shakeup. Stage four, we finally start to get some real hills. There's some tough climbs in the middle of the day, and then it's a flat-ish finish. Stage 5 is probably the first real climber's day. It's got a boatload of what they are calling Cat 1 climbs. Probably better classified as Cat 2 or Cat 3. I think it's a good example of the arbitrary nature of these climbs.
If these are Cat 1 climbs, the Peloton is in for it because there's a lot of them.
Yeah, it's kind of up and down all day, and that's something that I think the Tour of Poland really likes to do. They don't have the real giant alpine climbs in this race, but they do a lot of smaller ones. So all of those climbs on stage 5 are short, but in quick succession, it's not going to be a very comfortable day. And then stage 6 is the queen stage, and it's a stage that we've seen before several times, actually. It's kind of quickly becoming, insofar as a stage at the Tour of Poland can be a classic stage, it's becoming the classic Tour of Poland stage. They take several laps around Bukovina Tatrzańska for a total of 174 kilometers. And each lap has two categorized climbs and then finishes on an uncategorized but still difficult climb. That's a lot of climbs. And even if they're kind of arbitrarily categorized, they're tough. And the last little drag there is about 5 kilometers long at around 4.5%, but there is a double-digit stretch about halfway up. So it's an uphill finish. This stage has been ridden the last several editions, and it's opened up GC gaps every time.
Well, this isn't the traditional decisive GC day of a Grand Tour. There's definitely, again, kind of a classic-y aspect to it because a lot of the selection is by attrition more than, you know, Chris Froome having better watts per kilo on the day than everyone else. It's You know, you not only did you make it over this climb, but you made it over while using less energy so that you'll make it over the next climb while these other three guys drop off. There's like a lot of kind of, even though it's decisive and it breaks up the GC and it's built on climbs, it's very much a tactical racing more than a math problem.
If you're a climber, you better get your tactics right though on this stage, because the stage that follows is a relatively flat time trial that's really going to shake up the general classification. It's the final stage, stage 7. It's a 25 kilometer time trial in Krakow. It's not all that long, but the last two tours of Poland have kind of come down to nail biters on this final day, on this final race against the clock. And I would imagine that's going to happen again this year, because none of the stages leading into stage 7 are so hard as to totally decide the GC before the last day.
It's almost disappointingly flat looking at the rolling parkour of the previous stages. So it's very, you really need to have some time banked as a lighter rider or as someone who is not comfortable in a TT, because a strong specialist is going to put in serious time, even though it's just 25K.
So that's all 7 stages of the 72nd Tour de Pologne. Let's take a closer look at the start list. So as we look a little more closely at the Tour of Poland start list, we'll give you the usual PSA. We're working from a provisional start list, and the Tour of Poland, much like the Classica de San Sebastian, the start list it changes a lot in between a week before the race and showtime. I think a lot of guys are slated to ride the race, and then a couple of days before they realize, yeah, I don't really want to do that. So we could see a couple of changes. We're working with what we've got. I think most of the big favorites are locked in, so hopefully that won't change in between now and then.
Is this really a PSA, too? I mean, it's more of a like disclaimer than a PSA.
That's fair. I think that's probably better terminology.
You're the one with the year of law school, so.
It's about more like 6 months. So
you're the one with 6 months of law school.
I think this would be more of an English question, wouldn't it? I mean,
semantics, really. The whole idea of a disclaimer is to prevent, you know, the legal repercussions, to make a reasonable person aware of the risks.
That's fair. I also did major in English, so I can't really get myself off the hook by saying it's an English problem. That would just be the same. Yeah.
You can't hide behind that.
Anyway, disclaimer. Yeah, this is a provisional start list.
Yep. And it's I think also part of the problem is it is, as I've said 50 or 60 times by now, hard to predict as a race. And there isn't a lot of, you know, if your training blocks get kind of messed up and you're using this race to prep for the Vuelta, you're not going to be able to look at the stages and say, this is what's going to happen. You know, and I'll just ride in with the gruppetto here. Like there may not be a gruppetto. A lot of these stages are totally blown apart. So it can be a tricky race in terms of in scheduling and what riders are going to do it.
The defending champion is not here. Rafał Majka won the race last year in a really tight victory. He is not in attendance at the 72nd Tour of Poland. So we're going to have a new winner this year. That just means it's really even more of an open field than it was last year. The GC favorites conversation, I think there are 5 or 6 guys who look like decent candidates for success, but none of them really stands out as the top favorite. Michał Kwiatkowski will definitely get the most publicity at the Tour of Poland. He's a reigning world champion, a home rider, former runner-up in the race. But because of the aforementioned kind of weird dynamic of coming off of the Tour de France, it's hard to say whether he'll even be anywhere near the top of the leaderboard. He was not at his best in the Tour de France. He looked pretty tired towards the end of the race. He abandoned in the final week. This parkour of tough but not really tough climbs and then a flat time trial to close out the race looks perfect for Michał Kwiatkowski. I mean, that's exactly what I would picture his ideal race would be. but I have no idea whether the form's there. So I think he's kind of a good example to start with of a rider who looks like he would be really well suited to this race, but who knows really whether he's really going to come out successful in the end. Movistar, on the other hand, I think is here looking to win in good form, and they have a lot of different options. They have three riders on their roster for this race who were in the top 10 last year, including Yanni Zagira, who is the two-time runner-up. Now, they've also got Benyat Inchausti, third last year, Andre Almeida, sixth last year. So a lot of different options on Movistar. I think Izagirre probably their best option. He's got, I think, the best time trial of those three guys. And he's also looking to be in excellent form this year. He's had a really big year in the smaller races. So a lot of firepower, Movistar. Benyat Inchausti and Amador both had excellent Giros d'Italia. So any of those guys could do really well in this race with this sort of hilly but not super mountainous profile on so many stages.
Sky's Sergio Henao is another guy with a lot of potential here, kind of coming in the other direction from those two, like really kind of trying to find his legs again, almost. A guy with a lot of ability, but kind of intermittent in terms of performance. I mean, we saw him at Tour of California, not looking incredibly dominant, still third overall, but I mean, he lost the race to a former winner here, Peter Sagan. So, you know, he's a good all-arounder. I'd like to see him come up with something. He's also got a really good team behind him, and he's got the ability that, like you mentioned with Kwiatkowski, to perform in these sort of all-around races. So a definite contender if the legs are there.
Another rider who's, I think, trying to find, and after this Tour de France, really has finally found his legs again. Robert Hessink was a really big rider in the Netherlands for a while. He seemed like the next big thing. And then he just had one issue after another that kept him from being at his best. And he's finally at that level again. He was in the top 10 in the Tour de France. He was just behind pretty much all of the biggest names in the race. And he was second here at the Tour of Poland all the way back in 2007. And he's put in a couple of good performances here in his career. So I would expect him to do pretty well. I think he's going to have motivation to come back to this race and show that he can do what he was able to do a few years ago, now that he's kind of finally getting back to that level again.
Yeah, he's one of those people who definitely tends more as a climber, but has enough TT ability to kind of hold off contenders and challengers at the end of the race on this final flattish TT. So just something we mentioned earlier kind of plays to his strengths. For me, I love watching Fabio Aru race. He's really good. I feel, without doing any research, like Astana has some sort of presence in Eastern Europe. So I'm going to say that the team is really psyched for him to do well. This isn't his bread and butter. You know, the climbs are a little short and a little quick, but he is, when all the gears are going, he's a very active, animated rider, a guy who can handle tempo changes, a guy who really likes to pedal hard and race hard, at least that's what it looks like on TV. So I don't know if there's overall victory potential here for him, especially again with that last time trial, but he's a guy who could blow up the race and have a lot of fun doing it, take a couple stages and make it a really good show.
Christophe Reblon of AG2R is a rider with a lot of versatile talent. He can climb, he can time trial, who has been mostly on domestique duty for his team the past couple of years, but he kind of always seems to do well in this race.
Yeah, I mean, Betancourt gets a lot of press, maybe more so because he is so variable in terms of performance. But Riblon's a guy who's shown a lot of just kind of all-around ability, and it's relatively quiet about it. But he's had, you know, three top tens here. He's had a podium. He's had a stage win. And, you know, his team is not having a bad year. It would be kind of cool if Aja Desert had, you know, a huge race with one of their riders.
Yeah, especially outside of France. That's not something that you typically associate with AG2R.
That's a good point.
Just kind of running down the list of other potential guys here who could try to do something in what is, a very open race. Ben Hermans of BMC is coming off a really nice Tour of Austria. Przemyslaw Niemiec is a local rider, well, local in that he's from Poland, and he's done pretty well in the past. Ilner Zakarin is on the provisional start list, and we learned a couple months ago that we should never leave him out of a pre-race show.
The mysterious Ilnur Zakarin.
Yeah, and the race does end with a time trial, and he showed in Switzerland a couple months back that, that's something that suits him pretty well. Tinkoff Saxo, they're not bringing defending champion Rafał Majka to the race. Robert Keselowski will be hoping to pick up the slack for them. He's been riding relatively quietly in a support role for most of the year, but he's actually a pretty talented all-rounder and a guy who could do pretty well here. Jürgen Vandenbroek's on the start list. Davide Formolo is here representing Cannondale Garmin.
Got Moreno Moser, one of his two, I think two, maybe there's more than I'm forgetting. One of his two big results, other than Strada Bianca, was here. Oh, God, when was it?
I believe it was all the way back in 2012.
Yeah, but a guy who is constantly on the verge of breakthrough, and like, he's like that rapper who's one hit away, and he's got these cool guest performances every couple of years, but never really puts out the big album.
R.I.P. Nate Dogg. Moser is indeed a former winner, but not a lot of results in the last long while. I think we're kind of really getting into the outsider territory. One team that might have a couple of outsiders on their squad, so I think they deserve really their own section in our start list discussion, is home team CCC. Maciej Paterski, really excellent rider, all-round skill set. He was the king of the mountains last year. He hasn't really done anything in the GC yet in the Tour of Poland in his career, but he's having a good year so far, and he's really strong on the kind of up and down, not too challenging mountain profiles. He took a nice win at the Volta Catalunya, for instance, earlier this year. Marek Rutkiewicz has been in the top 10 a couple of times in his career. Jan Hurt, up-and-comer on the team, who was just third overall at the Tour of Austria, and a really young rider, but I think an exciting rider for the future. And this is a race that, as we've talked about in the past, it's sprung a lot of talents. So he could be a one. He could be that guy. He's got the potential, I think, to be a guy to come out of this race and go on to big things.
I've also got some riders from the past. Davide Rebellin, 43, still racing. I think this is probably his biggest race this year since he was gentleman's agreemented out of the Giro. So I don't think he's going to have a huge day, but worth mentioning.
He did race the Amstel Gold race, and he also raced Brabantse Pale. He's had a decent year, actually, but that gentleman's agreement pretty much kept him from racing in one of the few races that CCC got invited to at the World Tour level. So I would imagine he'll be pretty interested in trying to pick up a stage win on some of these hillier days.
Yep, and Marcel Kittel back in action. I think if he just finishes, this will probably be a victory for him. I believe his last result was not finishing the German National Championships. So I don't think there's going to be a lot of pressure on him for stage wins. Just kind of get into racing. You know, this year has been kind of written off for him, but, you know, he's a big boy. I think he'll figure it out.
Yeah, it's not been the best of years for Kittel. He's certainly the biggest name sprinter on the start list, but there's a lot of other strong, fast men here. Giacomo Nizzolo, Recon Ride podcast veteran interviewee. Sacha Modolo, Caleb Ewan, really, really exciting Australian sprinter for Orica Green Edge, who's having a great year so far at lower level races. And this is an opportunity for him, I think, to show off that he can hang with the big dogs in a World Tour event. JJ Lobato of Movistar, also having a nice year so far, and a little more capable on some of the hillier profiles, so he could have a chance here. And then there are a couple of guys who are a little punchier who could try to look for mountain victories and who maybe will find themselves without much of a chance on the GC because of that time trial, but will instead go on the attack and the hills. I'm thinking Carlos Betancourt. Diego Ulisi actually won a big stage here a couple of years ago. That was one of his first big victories, actually. And returning from his relatively brief suspension, Ulisi's had a pretty good year so far. Won a stage at the Giro d'Italia, and now he's gearing up for the second half of his season. So I'm thinking he'll be pretty well suited to some of these up and down profiles. All right, so we've covered the provisional start list. Hopefully we didn't leave anybody out who's going to be a late entry into the race. So that leaves us with predictions time. Why don't you take this one first? I'll give you the honors of going first here.
All right. I'm going to pick one of the Movistar guys to win it. Just, you know, I think they're going to say, guys, let's try something new. let's have all of us ride for one guy. They'll flip a coin or throw darts or something, draw straws, to pick which of their three pretty good riders they're going to select for a GC candidate. Yeah, I'll go with John Izaguirre, I think, of the riders there. They have too strong a team. Like, Movistar is almost like Bizarro Sky. They're a lot of talent, just they need to direct it a little bit better. I'm going to go with Sergio Henao in second. I think, like I said, strong team, strong guy. I think it'll be pretty close. I don't know, you know, if it's going to be one of those things where a guy breaks away and then another person erodes the advantage in the time trial. And then from the heart, I'm going to go with Christophe Reblon. Like I said, like Ajay Desert, like what they do mostly. I wish they would. They're of the French teams, I think they are the most serious as a professional cycling squad. So any result they get, I'm pretty psyched about.
I'm going to be, now that you've given your predictions, what I'm about to say is going to sound pretty boring. I totally agree. I think Movistar's got a great chance of coming away with the victory. And I think the fact that he's been second twice in a row means that John Izaguirre will earn the nod as team leader. So he's my winner pick as well. And Sergio now is also on the podium for me. So we got a lot in common on this one. I think now is having a really nice year in the 1 week races, and this is a good course for him. And Izaguirre and Henao both did really well earlier this year in the Basque Country in a race that's actually kind of similar in terms of profiles and having a final TT to close things out. And then I'll put Robert Hesink also on the podium. I think he's got that ability to hang on in the time trial, and he's, to me, probably of the climbers on this start list, he's got to be near the top in terms of form and ability right now, coming off of a really strong ride at the Tour de France. Any closing thoughts before we say so long?
Yeah, right now is a really good time for Eastern European riders, and especially for Polish riders. I mean, there's a ton of guys. You got Kwiatkowski wearing the rainbow stripes. You have his you have Michał Golosz on his team. You have Maciej Paterski. You've got Rafał Majka. Just a ton of really good Polish riders, really good Eastern European riders. And I think kind of the roots of that may be in this race. I mean, it's about 10 years old. Those guys, when they were coming up as juniors, had this race to watch. And I think it's a really cool, really unique event. And it kind of drives me crazy that it's called Tour de Pologne instead of Wojciechowska Popolska, which I guess is what it would be in Polish. I'm not totally sure. I think the race kind of needs more of a Polish identity to it, rather than this sort of, we know a lot of people speak French, so we'll use the French name. I mean, if they're going to do that, they should do English, although that would upset the ASO. There's probably some backroom dealings, because obviously, right? No, I think it's a really cool race, and I think it's done really good things, and it might be a great development model for other places where cycling isn't historically, you know, a big athletic deal.
Yeah, and they visited a couple of other Eastern European countries and plan to do so in the future as well. They were in Slovakia, I think, in the last couple of years. There's been some talk of them maybe visiting Croatia at some point. So they really are, I think, a gateway into the top level of cycling for Eastern Europe, which doesn't really have any other big races like this. So we will be back in a little over a week for another 1 week stage race. The Eneco Tour, the always exciting classics reprise at the end of the season.
Consistently improving Eneco Tour, I should say.
In terms of excitement?
Yeah, they've done a really good job kind of turning it from a laughing stock into a don't be a UCI-owned race because you'll look stupid to this is actually pretty good cycling. So
yeah, in the last couple of years, I think it's been a nice opportunity for the guys who didn't quite do well in the classics to have one last chance to show up in front of the home crowds and try to pull something off. Well, we'll be back for that relatively soon. So stay put, you don't have to stay put. You can go somewhere for like 8 days, I guess. But do come back and enjoy the Tour of Poland. And of course, enjoy the Classic of San Sebastian if you're listening and you haven't seen that yet. So until then, this has been the Recon Ride Podcast. I'm Dane Cash.
And I'm Cosmo Catalano.
And that's our show.